Welcome to History's Burn Book, the podcast where history's most powerful people finally get dragged using their own receipts. Because apparently, humanity has always been one badly timed ego trip away from societal collapse. Today's entry is the French Revolution, or as I personally like to call it, the consequences of rich people treating a starving nation like an optional side quest. France in the late 1700s was basically one giant luxury influencer mansion built on top of a financial sinkhole. The monarchy was dripping in silk, diamonds, imported desserts, chandeliers, powdered wigs, and enough perfume to fumigate a medieval sewer, which frankly was useful because Versailles smelled horrific. History books love making Versailles look elegant and graceful. Meanwhile, the reality was several thousand people crammed into a palace with limited sanitation, chamber pots everywhere, and nobles who thought bathing too often might actually kill them. Imagine a royal palace crossed with a perfume counter and a truck stop restroom. That's the vibe we're going for, okay? And at the center of this glitter-coated fever dream were Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette. Now, Louis XVI wasn't an evil mastermind material. He wasn't a villainy kind of person. Honestly, he radiates exhausted substitute teacher energy. The man liked locks. Locks. While his entire kingdom was spiraling toward revolution, Louis was basically in the garage going, okay, check out this mechanism. Sir, people were eating wallpaper paste. And Marie Antoinette, well, history turned her into the final boss of public hatred. But here's the part textbooks barely touch. She was 14 years old when she arrived in France. 14. A child. And before entering the French court, officials literally stripped her naked to make sure she wasn't bringing Austrian clothing into France because apparently international diplomacy was powdered by absolute nonsense. She then got dumped into Versailles, which was basically the world's most expensive psychological warfare experiment. Everything was public. Waking up, public. Getting dressed, public. Eating, public. Nobles fought for the privilege of handing royalty their socks because proximity to power was the original influencer clout. Now imagine living your entire life inside a comment section written by people with lead poisoning and unresolved jealousy. Then came the marriage rumors. Louis and Marie's marriage reportedly wasn't consummated for years, and Europe became weirdly obsessed with it. Like, pamphlets were sent out mocking relentlessly, and rumors spread that Louis couldn't perform, and that Marie was cheating, and that she had secret lovers, and secret affairs, and secret everything. France treated royal gossip like it was the Super Bowl. And those little pamphlets? Absolutely savage. Think of a nastier version of Bridgerton, essentially. Okay. Well, people think internet culture invented public humiliation, but actually it was 18th century France looked at modern cancel culture and said, cute, watch this. The pamphlets would accuse Marie Antoinette of incest, affairs, corruption, greed, manipulating the king, destroying France, and basically being a sexually chaotic supervillain in a powdered wig because she was Austrian. And people already distrusted her because she was Austrian. So they literally named her Madame Deficit. I can't pronounce anything. Which honestly sounds like less like a queen and more like a rejected WWE villain. But while the monarchy was busy drowning in gossip and ballroom drama, France itself was collapsing financially. Bad harvests wrecked grain supplies, bread prices exploded, workers lost jobs, winters became brutal, and France was deep in debt after helping America during the American Revolutionary War. That's right. France looked at America fighting Britain and went, you know what sounds fun? Financial ruin for freedom. Then, of course, America won independence while France got stuck holding the economic equivalent of a cursed group project. The inequality was staggering. The poor paid crushing taxes. The wealthy barely contributed anything. Nobles floated around Versailles just like haunted wedding cakes while ordinary people struggled to survive. And then came one of the wildest scandals of royal history. The Diamond Necklace Affair. This story sounds like a drunk fan fiction writing, but it actually happened. So a pair of scammers convinced a cardinal that Marie Antoinette secretly wanted an insanely expensive diamond necklace, but she never asked for it. Did that matter? Well, absolutely not. Public opinion grabbed that scandal and ran through the streets with it like a raccoon holding stolen Taco Bell. Suddenly, Marie Antoinette becomes the symbol of excess. People genuinely believed the monarchy was bathing in diamonds while children starved. And speaking of starving, things got bad. Not the slightly inconvenient grocery prices bad like we are, but full-scale desperation bad. Bread was life in France. Most ordinary citizens survived on it, and then prices skyrocketed and people couldn't eat. Accounts describe families spending nearly all their income on just bread alone. Riots would erupt and markets exploded into chaos and people were genuinely terrified. Meanwhile, Versailles kept hosting elaborate parties like the nation wasn't actively foaming at the mouth outside the gates. Nothing says we understand the struggles of common people quite like silk shoes and 17-course dinners during a famine. Then came the moment history books simplify in one neat paragraph. The storming of the Bastille. Most people assume the Bastille was packed with political prisoners. Nope. There were actually only a handful of prisoners inside. The Bastille mattered because of what it represented. Royal authority, fear, arbitrary punishment, and the monarchy's ability to crush people when it wanted. The crowd tore it apart stone by stone, like they were rage deleting a symbol from existence. And that's where the revolution transforms from political frustration into full chaos mode. Heads start appearing on spikes, which historically speaking is usually a sign that negotiations are not going very well. The monarchy panicked and tried to flee France during the infamous Flight of Varennes. And this escape attempt was embarrassing. The royal family disguised themselves as servants, but Louis was recognized because his face was literally printed on currency. Imagine trying to go undercover when your face is basically the national app icon. That failed escape destroyed whatever trust remained. Now people didn't just think the monarchy was clueless, but they thought they were traitors. Then came the guillotine. Ironically, it was introduced as more humane of an execution method because it supposedly treated everyone equally. Everyone says, "Welcome to modern democracy," quite like an industrialized decapitation. And France became obsessed with it. Executions turned into public entertainment, and crowds would gather daily to watch it. People would knit while watching beheadings, and vendors actually sold snacks. There were literally people treating mass executions like brunch theater. And then enters Maximilien Robespierre, a man who started as principled revolutionary and slowly enveloped into sleep paralysis demon with political influence. He believed terror was necessary to protect the revolution, which is exactly the kind of sentence that should make everyone slowly back towards the exits. Under the Reign of Terror, people were executed over suspicion, rumors, personal grudges, political disagreements, bad timing, existing incorrectly near someone paranoid. And the revolution became a machine feeding on fear. Former allies turned on each other consistently. Yesterday's revolutionary hero became tomorrow's alleged enemy of the people. It was basically political musical chairs, except every chair was a guillotine. And eventually, the machine came for Maximilian II. After ordering countless executions, he was arrested by fellow revolutionaries, terrified he'd target them next. So during the chaos, his jaw was shattered by a gunshot. Historians still argue whether it was self-inflicted or someone shot him. But either way, the man spent his final hours bleeding and unable to speak before being dragged to the guillotine to help. He helped normalize, you know. And that's the thing about revolutions fueled entirely by paranoia. Everyone eventually looks executable. And maybe that's the real truth textbooks struggle to explain. Because the French Revolution wasn't clean. It wasn't simple. It was just, it wasn't heroic speeches and liberty slogans. It was rage, hunger, humiliation, class warfare, propaganda, mob violence, hope, fear, and an entire society snapping under pressure while everyone convinced themselves that they were the reasonable ones, right? Humanity keeps trying to sort history into heroes and villains when reality is it's usually just exhausted people making catastrophic decisions in decorative footwear. Yeah. Marie Antoinette died at 37. Thousands died during the terror. France cycled through governments like a man resetting a router with tears in his eyes. And after all that bloodshed, France eventually ended up with an emperor anyway. Because history occasionally feels like the universe itself muttering. Fantastic word at work, everybody, truly. Anyway, so that was the French Revolution in history's burn book. So I hope you all have a wonderful day. And let's try not to have a French Revolution over again, even though things kind of look similar right now. So see you next episode.